Blog Talk Radio.
The Anthony Johnson Start right now. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Anthony Johnson, and welcome to this edition of the Anthony Johnson Show. I'm glad to be back. Had a couple of major projects that I was working on, so I'm sorry I was away for the last couple of weeks. My organization, Dreamfield Academy, we had a big job fair in the community where I reside. We have a lot of issues going on in our community, high unemployment, high poverty, high illiteracy, high crime. I think one of the things we need to do, start doing, is to get our community moving in a positive direction. And we can start by getting good-paying jobs in those communities and addressing the education as well. So it was a job education fair. So had companies that came out, as well as education programs, such as Graduate Philadelphia, does a lot of good work in the city of Philadelphia, and throughout, not just Philadelphia, but New Jersey, people coming from California who migrated to Philadelphia who want to continue their education. So it helps individuals, adults who have attended college, who've earned some credits, and who want to go back and finish. And Graduate Philadelphia is a nonprofit organization that makes that happen for so many adults in the city of Philadelphia. 80,000 Philadelphians who have some college experience, have earned some credits. This is a great opportunity to go back and complete that degree. We know what our job market is going to look like, in the next year or two. We know that many of the jobs are requiring at minimum, an associate's degree. So it's important. Graduate Philadelphia does magnificent work. So keep doing the great job that you do, guys. We appreciate it. So that was one of the projects that I was doing. Another project that's coming in sometime late January, beginning of February, I've reached out to Immigration, Customs Enforcement, and Homeland Security. They're gonna partnership with Dreamfield Academy, and we're gonna do an immigration forum in the community where I reside, and we're gonna invite every and anyone to come out, and those individuals who may be undocumented immigrants, they're going to get assistance, free resources, free legal advice to help them navigate through this process that President-elect Donald Trump has vowed that, he's going to round up 11 million undocumented immigrants and send them back to Mexico. The sad truth about what's going on in our country is Donald Trump didn't create this current climate of buffoonery and ignorance. It was always there. Anyone that has listened to the Anthony Johnson Show over, I would say, maybe the last year and a half can justifiably say, hey, Anthony was saying this stuff long before a lot of people were saying it, particularly the American media. And, one of the things that I talked about was about Donald Trump was that Donald Trump is a snake oil salesman. President-elect Donald Trump is a snake oil salesman, and not a very good one either. But he peddled the poison of ignorance and racism and bigotry and xenophobic and anti-Semitism and all those other things, horrible things, sexism, because he knew that there was a market to peddle it to. He knew that there would be people who would drink it. They would drink it thirstily. And that was one reason why he won. It's funny, I was reading an article today, ladies and gentlemen. You know, already some people who voted for Trump are having, you know, buyers, you know, remorse. Like, oh, I didn't know he was all about making himself rich and every and just his friends and family rich. It's like, no, yeah, actually you did. But let's be frank, you didn't vote for Donald Trump because of his business acumen. You know, you don't hear any economist, world-renowned economist, any Nobel laureate economist who speaks highly of Donald Trump. Please, you don't hear Scree Rock off 30th Street talking about Donald Trump. But this guy is ridiculous. You voted for him because he played on your fears. He played on your hate and your bigotry. And that's why he won. But so much for being the common man's, the common people's president, because that's what Donald Trump ran on. He ran on, I am going to be the common people's president. You know, you can have a beer with me. You can talk to me anytime you want. I'm not going to be like them Washingtonians. You know, I'm going to, you know, what do you say, drain the river? He wants to get all of the corrupt. But it's interesting because Trump is assembling the richest and most inept administration in modern history. The richest. And interesting about all those wealthy people that Donald Trump is tagging for major cabinet posts is that many are the children of parents who supported Ronald Reagan and his dreaded trickle-down economics. So people are saying, well, I voted for Donald Trump because he resonates with me. But you're a working poor stiff, or you're actually poor. So how is he going to help you? He's not. He doesn't have any individuals on stand the plight of the poor, the plight of the working poor, the plight of the middle class. He's staffed his cabinet with people who have tons and tons and tons of wealth and who gave him handsomely. Donald Trump, did you notice that Donald Trump didn't do any, like, fundraisers or anything like that? He didn't, you know, if you send fire, he didn't take the Barack Obama approach when he was running, when President Obama was running, you know, $5, $2, you know, or Bernie Sanders, $2.50, you know, $3. And he's and made all his money, you know, in raising funds. Donald Trump basically just had secret, wealthy, multi-wealthy billionaires who gave to him because they said, this is a guy we can control. Thinks he's one of us, but we actually laugh at him at our dinner parties and stuff. But he's about to assume the most powerful job in the world, and we want to have access to that office. So what's $100 million to somebody who's worth $5.1 billion or somebody who's worth $10 billion, or $20 billion, or $32 billion. It's nothing. That's pocket change. And so much for Donald Trump keeping jobs in America. He was talking. Everybody's been talking about this week about the carrier job, the carrier company in Indiana that was packing its bags to leave for Mexico, and with it, 1,400 jobs. Well, you know, Donald Trump said, oh, they're not going anywhere. Or if they're going somewhere, they can't, no tax breaks, no nothing. So he met with the powwows at Carrier, and he and Vice President-elect Mike Pence worked out this deal with Carrier where they're giving them a $7 million tax break that's, you know, that will take care of them for over the next couple of years, a $7 million tax break. But here's the deal. Carrier is still sending over 700 jobs to Mexico anyway. So something like 750 jobs are going to stay here, and 750 are going to go overseas. That deal is an absolute joke. Let me tell you how big of a joke it was. Sarah Palin, who up until a couple of days ago was in the running for a top position in his cabinet, she blasted him for this deal. This is the man that's going to be on the 20th of January. He is going to be taking control of the presidency. He is going to be sworn in as our president. And his first move was an absolute blunder. Kerry received a huge tax break to keep some jobs in America, while just as many of the jobs will go to Mexico. A fifth grader would have better negotiated that deal than Trump. A broomstick would have negotiated that deal more intelligently. And here's the kicker. Trump just set a precedent that most American companies will clamor for. Huge tax breaks to keep some jobs in America. So he said after he patting himself on the back, and I'm reaching out to all those other American companies. You want to be down with this program. And they're laughing. They're like, yes, we do. Yes, we do. How many jobs do we have over here at this company? Oh, we have 3,500 jobs. So if we decide to pack up and go to Mexico, let's say we'll take about, you said we got 35? Yeah, 3,500, sir. Why don't we take about 3,000? We'll take 3,000 jobs over to Mexico. We'll leave 500 here. We'll get $10, $15 million tax break and laughing all the way to the bank. For those who stayed home and didn't vote, and for those of you who did vote for Trump, you said you voted for him because he would no longer let American jobs leave the country, right? Donald Trump said no more American jobs was leaving the country. And even the pathetic American media, even when some of them guys had you know, a semblance of intelligence to say, what do you mean when you say no job is leaving America? Are you saying no job? But, you know, I mean, let's be frank here. You know, some of the jobs will probably leave. But if we can hold on to as many as we can, wonderful. He said no jobs. 750 jobs for carriers going over to Mexico. So what happened to those 750 Americans who work at Carrier who just lost their job? Oh, you retain 750, but 750 is gone. So those individuals are unemployed. Can't blame Trump for this buffoonery. You can't blame Trump for this trickery. Because there's, you know, people who voted for Trump keep using the excuse that he appealed to them because he cares and he identifies with them. And ladies and gentlemen, let's be frank, that's just plain fanciful. How quick do we forget? You know, when President-elect Obama took over this country, I mean, over 800,000 people were out of work. Country was in a ditch and about to go over the cliff, but hard work, determination, we tightened our belts and we weathered that storm. And under President Obama, the middle class in America are doing better for the first time in more than 40 years. Now, let me be frank here. I didn't say the middle class is on easy street, and I didn't say they resemble the glory decades of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, because they don't. And quite sadly, in my opinion, the only group, political party that will be able to bring that type of prosperity back are progressives. And perhaps our opportunity will come. Because I think one of the reasons why Trump won is that people are just tired of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Hardcore, loyal Democrat, registered Democrats got tired of seeing the Democrat center, you know, slide further and further to the right. Bush nearly eradicated the middle class, but President Obama brought them back from the dead, and yet they went out in droves to vote for Trump. To put it in context, many of those middle-class Democrats that were supposed to go to Secretary Clinton that voted for Trump are, in fact, the descendants of those Democrats who voted for Reagan, who started the war on the middle class beginning in the 1980s. You started seeing the decline of the middle class by the 70s. Time Reagan got there, his mind was made up. He wanted to get rid of the middle class. And he was able to effectively nearly bring them about to their extinction. So let's stop with the middle class, you know, being the forgotten majority. That's what the pathetic American media keeps talking about. The middle class is the forgotten majority. No, you're not. You were never the forgotten majority. The forgotten majority in America is and always will be the working poor and the poor who have seen their incomes plummet in the last 30 years, and the poor have seen just about all the elimination or the watered-down version of the safety net programs that was supposed to keep them on their feet and guide them to become working poor and ultimately, possibly, country for so long. It was a springboard. If you were poor, you aspired to be middle class. And then you worked. You worked that middle as a poor person and hard work, educating yourself, working hard, and then you moved up to be working poor. And then you worked harder, and then you moved up to be middle class, and you said, hey, I'm good here. I can raise a family. I can buy a home. I can put some money away. I can send the kids to college. Me and the missus, we can, or the mister, we can retire, have a nice little nest egg. That's what middle class was all about. It inspired the poor and the working poor to become middle class and quite possibly wealthy. Destruction of the middle class, all you have is poor and working poor, and they never ascend. They'll never reach that zenith of being wealthy. So that's what Reagan wanted to get rid of. And Trump will finish what Reagan and George W. started, which is to eliminate the middle class from the equation altogether and make America a nation of wealthy and working poor, period. Let's move on. Jill Stein, as you know, the Green Party presidential candidate, recently raised millions of dollars, over $5 million, to have a recount in two of the three states, Michigan and Pennsylvania. These were states that Donald Trump had blown away Hillary Clinton. But after she did this, as the results continue to come in, the recount shows that Pennsylvania and Michigan votes for Trump are shrinking, while Secretary Clinton's popular vote has already surpassed 2.5 million, and it's still growing. But here's the fundamental question, ladies and gentlemen. Does it really matter at this point? I mean, Trump at this point is putting people in, he's putting some of the most incompetent individuals in cabinet pictures at such an alarming rate. He's moving faster than he files for bankruptcy. And if Secretary Clinton is the winner in the final count, at the final count of the popular vote, will it matter because of the Electoral College? I don't know if you've been saying, but they keep writing these stories about the Electoral College was supposed to keep individuals like Donald Trump out. You can't keep using an archaic dinosaur system and expect to keep the boogeyman out forever. The Electoral College has proven at this point what it's been showing chinks in the armor for over a century, that it's archaic and it was supposed to be done with. Stein has gotten a lot of criticism, and which kind of befuddles me, because no Democrat has made a move to address that, to ask for a recount. You know, and even though, you know, people are, it's been met with, like, suspicion, like, what does she have to gain? Well, she didn't win, and doing a recount, it's not going to say, upon further review, Jill Stein won. She had no chance in winning, and she didn't win. But I think she's had an epiphany that having this man as our president is not going to be a very good thing. Moving right along to Standing Rock Sue, I told you, once the real American hero say enough, it's on. Every American, but they're not, should be so fierce that they wouldn't need an oven to cook turkey or ham this holiday season. As we watch the brutal treatment of Native American families by greedy, corrupt, and apathetic Americans. And where is Senator Elizabeth Warren, who ran, one of her campaigns was, hey, I'm Native American, I'm part Native American. Yeah, exactly. She's nowhere to be found. She's been mum. And President Obama, who I've said time and time again, I think he's done a great job overall. I think he's one of the great presidents. But President Obama, it's almost like at this point right now, he has more power than he's ever had because he's on his way out. And he has the power to say enough and go down there and support those Native Americans. But he doesn't. He's been silent. And who comes to the rescue? Our true American heroes, veterans who served in all aspects, every part of the military. Some 2,000 have come to support the residents by serving as human shields, by building for the protesters who are being assaulted by police with water cannons and fired on using rubber bullets. Will you and law enforcement deem the 2,000 veterans, America's true American heroes, will you deem them unpatriotic or un-American for that? And speaking of racism, racist bigots, the KKK, white nationalists, all say that the white man is losing America. We've been hearing this since the late 90s and all of 2000. So who are the white men losing America to? And when did white men get sole ownership of America anyway? Well, let's give some data. For the record, white men own more than 90% of the professional sports teams, over 90% of general managers, over 90% control American businesses, 88% are either president or vice president of those companies, 90% of Wall Street are white men, the highest echelon of the American government, 90% are white men. Look at SCOTUS, the Federal Reserve, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all controlled by white men. Yet racist bigots, members of the KKK, and white nationalists cry and say to me, Anthony, you don't understand. The white man is near an extinction. And sadly, this idiotic and vile rhetoric is supported by some women, Latinos, Asians, and black people in America. That is one of the American tragedies in America. And also, a jury is deadlocked on a South Carolina ex-cop trial who murdered a black man. Some context, ladies and gentlemen. Walter Scott was a black man. He was pulled over by a police officer, Slanger, for a taillight. Ran, but was unarmed when he ran away. Slanger shot Scott in the back, killing him. The cop then took a gun and planted it on a dead body. And he would have gotten away with it. He would have gotten away with murder had not for a passerby who saw what was occurring and videotaped the murder. So he would have gotten away with murder. Slanger would have gotten away with murder. But wait a minute. He's about to get away with murder. See, deadlock, which means it could be declared a mistrial, and then the prosecutors would have to do it again, and they had to get the witnesses. Not that they need any witnesses, because the tape says it all. But the presiding judge has stated that if they can't break the deadlock, then he will declare a mistrial and have it retried. Okay. Judge Newman, if you do in fact declare a mistrial and retry the case later with a different jury, then do us all a favor. Let's make sure that the jury is more diverse. 11 white people and one black person does not constitute diversity. And for some who have said, well, OJ had 10 to 1 black people, I didn't think it was diversity either. So you're talking to the wrong individual if you're trying to use that as an example. And the OJ Simpson murder trial, Nicole, that was not a clear-cut case. There was no videotape. There was nothing. Scott was murdered by Slanger, and we saw the video. The whole world saw the video. Last week, ladies and gentlemen, Fidel Castro died at the age of 90. Of course, America was divided over his passing. Some believe Castro was the most evil person that ever lived, which is pretty sad. While others have a great deal of respect for the revolutionary. Remember, when Castro offered assistance to the victims of Hurricane Katrina, when American politicians and officials said, no, we got this, and they actually didn't have it, we were taught to hate Muammar Gaddafi and Fidel Castro growing up. Yet both were always willing to help the forgotten majority in America, which is the poor, who for years supported Gaddafi when he did their bidding, went after him only when he decided that he wouldn't let them pimp him anymore. And Castro, well, he didn't want the mob or the American government pimping his country and his citizens. So let's be frank here, let's be candid. Gaddafi and Castro definitely had their demons, but they also had their moments of humanity. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, as we wrap up tonight's show, I'd like to end this evening episode of the Anthony Johnson Show by expressing my deep condolences to Michael Jones, his sister Rosalind Holmes Jordan, and the other siblings on the passing of their mother, Elizabeth Jones. Elizabeth Jones was a woman of great fortitude, a woman of brilliance and steadiness, and she passed those wonderful traits on to her children. Elizabeth Jones is the true definition of determination, wisdom, compassion, and love. She is and always will be a woman of great strength and courage and integrity. See, the true mark of a great individual is not wealth, power, or other materialistic things. No. The true mark of a great individual are the lives that they've touched and made better for all of humanity. Elizabeth Jones did just that. Good night.